All right, welcome back. All right, we're going to give you these two clips. The first, September of 2012, Patrick Claussen, old school bad guy. You know, the Washington Institute's Morning Star Senior Fellow. Beware of the fellows. The pirates. Or the pirate interlocutors, as the case may be. Senior Washington Institute's Morningstar Senior Fellow and Director of Research. And, you know, he's a Bernaysian propagandist extraordinaire. Anyway, this was what he said. If we're ready with that, I want to do this. This is what he said back in September of 2012 as far as, how to pick a fight with Iran, basically. If you're ready with that, go ahead, please.
I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. And it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way of America gets to war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II, as David mentioned. You may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people might think Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall he had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Some people might think that Mr. Johnson wanted to send troops to Vietnam. You may recall he had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. We didn't go to war with Spain until the until the Maine exploded. And may I point out that Mr. Lincoln did not feel he could call out the Federal Army until Fort Sumter was attacked, which is why he ordered the commander at Fort Sumter to do exactly that thing which the South Carolinians had said would cause an attack. So if, in fact, the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if somebody else started the war.
There you go. I mean, are you kidding me? Listen, you know, we were led to believe that, some goofy video was published on YouTube. And then as a result of that, suddenly a consular outpost in Benghazi, 500 or 600 miles away from the U.S. embassy in Libya, was attacked by a group of just, you know, ordinary goofballs who saw a YouTube video and decided that, you know, they were upset. Even though they managed to hold off coordinate an attack on a group of special operators, basically, you know, highly trained military folks, just a bunch of, you know, radical goofballs who watched the video. Well, I'll tell you something. And that, of course, was completely false. And people should be in prison for that, quite frankly. But if anyone watched a video and got upset, I would think it'd be videos like this. Patrick Claussen saying, I mean, did you hear what he said? It's astonishing that we don't seem to, I don't know. Why is this guy? Why does he have any power? I mean, I'm asking rhetorically, but this is a problem. You know, like he said, I mean, you heard him at the outset of his speech. He said, frankly, I think crisis initiation is really tough. Crisis initiation? And it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. This is how these people think. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way of America getting to war is what would be best for us. Who is us? Because I'm pretty sure that the us that I would think of when I say us is not the us he's thinking of when he says us. It's not best for me. It's not best for you. This is how these goofballs think. So, several years on, five plus years on, five and a half, close to, he's, you know, obviously nothing has changed as far as he's concerned. And so here's kind of let me see if I can give you kind of where he's at now as far as this is concerned. Let's see. Let me give you an update, and you can hear. I won't give you this full speech, but the second video is just from a few days ago, and you'll hear it. You'll hear him basically making the case, and this I think is even worse than what he said back in 2012, because what he's doing is building the case for what you just heard him say. So. If you're ready with the second video, can we play that? This is, again, Washington Institute. It's Patrick Claassen speaking just a few days ago. And this YouTube video is titled, Protest in Iran. Why? What impact? How should the U.S. respond? How should the U.S. respond to protests in Iran? Think about it. So do you see the setup that has been building here? I mean, I realize it's just a couple of videos, but... hopefully you kind of get a flavor of what's happening here. If you're ready with that, go ahead, please.
And we'll be speaking, I think, from the table, unless you want to come up here, Patrick. It's up to you.
So my former colleagues at the International Monetary Fund in their reports about Iran's economy say what we macroeconomists would say about Iran's economic situation, namely that it's pretty good. That Iran's GDP is going to grow this year more than the U.S. GDP. Iran's budget deficit is going to be smaller relative to the size of the economy than that of the United States. Iran is running a healthy current account surplus in its international trade, unlike the United States, which runs a large deficit. And so that the picture looks pretty decent. Well, I thought that it was telling that when the New York Times ran a very nice article the other day by about Iran's economic situation, it was written by a novelist, Amir Ahmadi Aryan, who got the economic situation much better than my IMF colleagues did, which is that while the macroeconomic numbers may be pretty good, the situation for ordinary Iranians has not been, that there hasn't been at all a trickle-down, that in fact – the annual survey that Iran does of the living standards of people has shown that those standards are still 10%, or a little more than 10%, below where they were a decade ago. And that unemployment is rising. It's 12.5%. And in fact, what's happening is that as more jobs are being created in Iran, that more people are coming into the labor force. We discovered that there are a lot of Iranians who always wanted to have jobs and just gotten discouraged and dropped out of the labor force and are now coming back in. And in particular, the inflation is back up again. That was the one great accomplishment of the Rouhani's first term, is that he was able to bring inflation down from 43% per annum down into single digits. Well, it's back up again. And furthermore, the price increases are heavily concentrated in the items that are consumed by ordinary working people. So bread prices rose for the first time in 3 years by 15% a couple weeks ago. Iranians, by the way, eat 353 pounds of bread a year. Think about that. That's impressive. Famously, egg prices and chicken prices are up sharply. Furthermore, as Mr. Aryan pointed out, the rich in Iran are flaunting their wealth. I recommend the Instagram account that has well over 250,000 followers, which is called Rich Kids of Tehran. You can see the lifestyles, the truly ostentatious. I mean, if you're in the market for a nice Maserati, for instance, you can see a good selection of them, and the parties that they throw, the clothes that they wear. I know enough, thanks to my significant other, about clothing to say that's expensive. And frankly, it looks like nothing so much the feel of what's going on in Iran at the moment is nothing so much like what happened in the Shah's days, where the Shah in 1971 organized a coronation ceremony at Persepolis, bringing thousands of foreign guests, chefs from France. They drank over 2,000 bottles of wine. I mean, it was the ostentatious wealth. And the Shah's government really shifted from concentrating on national economic development to concentrating on the good times for the select few. And that is increasingly what the Islamic Republic feels like. So that's the overall picture behind these protests. Now, let me focus on two specific issues, though. One is the cost of Iran's destabilizing foreign activities. We often say that, oh, well, their support for these various terrorist movements and their nuclear programs, really not that expensive. Well, that may be true in absolute numbers if you compare it to the size of the U.S. economy, but it's not particularly true compared to the size of Iran's economy. Now, we don't have precise numbers, obviously, on how much they spend on supporting the Syrian government and various terrorist groups. The U.S. government often likes to use in its internal thinking the number $7 billion a year, which I think is a bit high. But if we throw in the nuclear program and the missile program, it's certainly in the billions of dollars. I think that it would be very hard to make the argument that the expenditures are less than about $4 or $5 billion a year, roughly half of that going to the Syrian government to big chunk going to Hezbollah. That nuclear and missile program is not cheap either. And at $4 to $5 billion, that's 1% of GDP. Well, by comparison, 1% of GDP in the United States would be $180 billion. Now, I don't think anybody would say that $180 billion is a small amount of money. Well, 1% of GDP is real money. And that's a minimal estimate. As I say, what the U.S. government usually uses is an estimate twice that. And furthermore, that's just for the direct costs. If we throw in indirect costs, we get a lot higher number. So, for instance, the new budget that was proposed by President Rouhani and for the next fiscal year in Iran says that military expenditures are going to be $12 billion. Well, much of that's frankly not necessary, except because of Iran's adventurous foreign policies. And so certainly there's another at least 1% of GDP that is due to the adventurous foreign policy. By the way, that $12 billion estimate, some people have said, oh, blah, 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 blah. He's trying to inflate it in order to embarrass the Revolutionary Guards. Actually, that's finally brought the Iranian government estimate of what it spends on the military close to that of international institutions like the usual arbiter of these things, SIPRI, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, which says that Iran's military spending is $12 billion a year.
So that's you know, it's ironic. If you're listening to what he's saying, Iran is actually doing pretty well, according to him and his IMF buddies. But it's really just a matter of numbers. And there's more going on going forward, but I won't bore you with the details. The point is, what he's doing is building an economic case for the invasion of Iran, and there's really nothing about security that is a concern. You know, you would think that if we saw muskets on the horizon, so to speak, then obviously there's a danger. But what he's talking about, this is a monumental case of projection. Everything that he would accuse Iran of, you know, these foreign, how did he put it? These foreign activities, destabilizing activities, etc. What has the United States military industrial complex been doing in Iran for the last seven decades, part of a broader Anglo-American establishment or Anglophile network effort dating back, you know, before the turn of the 20th century in the region. So it's interesting how we can ignore that, you know, and he talks about how Iran's military spending is $12 billion a year. There are, you know, I've mentioned how the SCO, which almost got shut down, apparently didn't. The SCO, its budget is more than Iran's military budget. Just one agency, one covert clandestine agency of the United States military industrial complex, its budget is larger than Iran's. In fact, as I've mentioned before, I mean, depending on the year, last year I think it would have been fourth, this year it would be fifth in terms of overall military spending if it were a country. Last year its spending would have been greater than China and Russia, I think, if memory serves. And Saudi Arabia is up there. Saudi Arabia spends an enormous amount Saudi Arabia has an enormous amount of military spending. Where does a lot of that come from? It comes from these backroom deals like Trump's visit last year. So it's an economic case that he's building. And really, you know, reading between the lines, it's sort of economic confessions or confessions of an economic hitman is kind of what it amounts to. You know, their economy actually seems to be doing fairly well. And the first part of what you heard him say, if there is any opulence, it's far eclipsed by, again, their neighbors who holy cow. You know, they're across the Persian Gulf. And that's a whole different story that I want to kind of jump into here for a minute. But basically, I mean, if you listen to the talk, again, it's protests in Iran. Why? What impact? How should the U.S. respond? They're building an economic case for destabilization and invasion. How will regional actors such as Hezbollah respond, and what impact will – and so, you know, kind of what you hear, you know, the harbingers of, well, if we don't act now, then something bad will happen. What is the pattern? What is the history? In other words, we should invade. We should destroy things before someone else does. And the evidence seems to clearly indicate that anywhere the CIA and partners go, the vacuum that is left is always worse. The vacuum that it creates in its regime, covert regime change actions, however covert or not, is always worse. And so, you know, we're hearing the drumbeat for war, unfortunately. Anyway, you heard what he said. I would expect to see some kind of staged false flag event this year, which is unfortunate. I hope that, you know, we can get our heads screwed on straight. But where, you know, why don't we overwhelm these talks at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, which is ridiculous? You know, these guys are so deeply embedded like ticks that they, you know, psychopaths like Patrick Claussen, who, I mean, he's all in. I certainly don't want to attack other countries. I don't think that's in your best interest or my best interest. So, you know, I hope we don't do that. Anyway, that's, you know, those two accounts. And, you know, like I said, you can listen to the rest of what Patrick Claussen says basically making an economic case, and it's not a very good case. It's really interesting. You know, he starts out by saying their economy is doing pretty well, actually, which means that they're not doing very well. And so, you know, they could be they're, you know, the regime is economically unstable and they could be toppled at any moment. They've been borrowing from credit institutions. The Central Bank of Iran has put a cap on the amount that institutions can pay in an interest of 90%, blah, 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 blah. You know, just trying to make an largely economic case for invasion. Really, what you get, I think what you come away with is that the time for economic hitmen to act is now, because there's a fire sale, and quite literally in a sense. So, you know, it's time to take action. Let's do it. Which is horrible. Anyway, this is very, very unfortunate. I hope that we don't find ourselves going down this path this year. And again, I mean, if we would just say no. Don't sign your children up for this kind of nonsense. It's interesting, you know, speaking of this subject line, New York Post ran the headline yesterday, Ahmadinejad arrested for inciting violence, quote unquote, in Iran. And that was interesting. Newsweek a few days ago, why are the Europeans so silent on the Iranian protests? I mentioned, you know, it's like the mainstream press, Al Jazeera English even, why did protests erupt in Iran? Mainstream or Washington Post, you know, what exactly is our Iran policy now? Oh, yeah, what is our Iran policy? 7 days ago. Slate, 7 days ago, what is fueling the protests in Iran? And again, the one of the best things that you can watch is James Corbett's video. Titled, what was it? We need to talk about the Iran protests. Yeah, we need to talk about the Iran protests. That was published back on the 5th as well. And I think maybe you could have included Patrick Claussen's most recent remarks somehow or other. Anyway, that's fantastic. And speaking of the Corbett Report, James Corbett, and how this is a different year, I'm not the only one feeling that way. Obviously, he is too. He published a video titled, It's 2018, Time to Step Things Up. We should actually probably play that. That's a short one. Maybe we'll play that in the next segment. But it's time to step things up, you know? True. And really, it's the choices that we make that make all the difference, or have the potential to make all the difference. We have an obligation to ourselves, to one another, and for posterity's sake. I like that most recent video that James made titled Winning Facebook Fake News Flag Makes People More Likely to Click. Yeah, which is fun, by the way, which is why they're not doing that anymore, the epic fail of the Facebook fake news flag. Anyway, let me get back to a couple of headlines here real quick. Along similar lines, you know, I mentioned that this chip nonsense, I mean, everything is a setup. Do you feel it coming out of last year? We felt that, you know, like the chip nonsense is a setup. And what was the Microsoft story, if memory serves? No, that's not it. Asus Chromebox 3 beats dozens of Windows PCs to USB-C and Intel's 8th generation processors. Where is that story? The Microsoft systems shutting down. So they've halted the patch. I'll have to look for that story. I thought that was interesting. Microsoft has halted their patches. You know, we had the story that circulated. You got to be aware of that stuff. Anytime you see the story, hurry up and, you know, update your software, update your – that's – to me, that's always a setup. And even if it's not, there's no guarantee when companies try to patch things that quickly that the patches will not cause additional problems. And that seems to be the case with these vulnerabilities, operating system, chip level vulnerabilities, which again, you know, seems to kind of be leading in game theory fashion to the story that I mentioned from back in 2015, Larry Ellison talking about how we can the way that he put it, when hackers master changing data, they could do things like changing air traffic control data, et cetera, or changing bank account, bank balances so that they're different. And that's an interesting thought when it comes to cryptocurrencies and the blockchain, et cetera. Well, you know, how do we prevent that? So he said, you know, naturally, according to the article, the Business Insider article back in 2015, naturally, he wasn't just trying to scare the world. He thinks Oracle has solved that problem, problem reaction solution. So we create a problem, then we scare you into reacting, and then here's a solution. That means that products built with Oracle's latest M7 Spark chips released this week will have a bunch of security features built into the chip and always turned on. They call it always on in silicon. Anyway, this is their grand solution. Now, see, it's a setup because what this means is that you could be locked out of your own operating system at the chip level. In other words, this is the ultimate coup for the intelligence community and old school bad guys who work with them and make stuff like this. Guys like Larry Ellison. Do you understand what I'm saying? A device with chip level encryption means that you could be someone could remotely access your device and shut you out of it at the chip level because of a backdoor, while you yourself would not be able to operate the device, period. Think that's a good idea? I sure don't. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read a few from Amazon.com. Dr. Sam Serino reviewed the Extendivite product. Good ingredients, feeling much better since taking product. It seems that the tablets work well. Once again, thank you for your product. My acid reflux is really improved thanks to the Extendivite. Together with my thumb joints, the pain is gone and I'm able to grip things much better. My friend has peripheral arterial disorder and their lower legs were hurting at a red color, but thankfully there has been a significant improvement. Kind regards, Janice. My husband feels a big difference using Extendivite. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
If you are one of the millions of people who get migraines, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist who created MigRelief, the patented dietary supplement that addresses nutritional deficiencies in adults and children with migraines. Thousands of physicians and pharmacists recommend MigRelief.
Call 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Technology issues. Anyway, so this meltdown and Spectre nonsense. I mentioned the recent article earlier, published today. Major computer chip bugs show the need for open security research, See, this feels like a setup. To me, I don't know about you, but Meltdown and Spectre feels like a setup. And if I had a device that would cooperate, I would give you the CNN counterpart to the story. And speaking of that, there was a CNN video. I want to play that too before we go out today about the the Bundy case that was dismissed with prejudice, which folks will say is good news. And so that was interesting. But the way that CNN ran it, it's like so many other things. You think, oh, it's kind of like the, it's Eric Nelson's A Gray State, where the first 20 minutes you think, well, this is interesting, informative, fairly objective. I wonder where this is going. And then the last 70 minutes, you kind of go, oh, yeah, I see where this is headed. which is really unfortunate. You know, it's just, it's, I mean, it's hackish propaganda is what it amounts to, unfortunately. And so this deal from CNN, it's no surprise. Joe Arpaio is pardoned by Trump today. That's an interesting story. Then we'll see, you know, what kind of backlash that has in terms of sparking political turmoil. I'm sure it will. But I digress. It was interesting that even CNN, including Jake Tapper, says that Michael Wolff's Fire and Fury is riddled with errors, et cetera, et cetera, which is no surprise because Michael Wolff said that. Again, I will just remind the listening audience that Donald Trump is not only a reality TV star, but he did actually have a stint in WWE. So it kind of makes me wonder if the White House didn't collaborate on Fire and Fury. You know, these kinds of stories, speaking of CNN, this always feels like a setup. You're supposed to, if you're not worried enough, if we can't spy on you with your devices and see you worrying, then we'll keep trying to goad you into fear. CNN story, even Tony Fadell, the iPhone's designer, is worried about phone addiction. So, you know, we're not just supposed to put phones down. We need an app. We need a government accountability agency and so forth. We need more intervention. The state, mom needs to step in and help people because people can't help themselves. I think it's interesting, you know. So Fidel tweeted in that device addiction is real and Silicon Valley has to fix it. So it's Silicon Valley's responsibility, not parents. Responding to the Wall Street Journal story about the investors' complaints, that I mentioned that yesterday. We need to control our environment and we need information. Step one, we need to know where the line is and when we've crossed over to addiction. Step two, we need our ongoing usage habits reflected back to us. Our smartphone bottle needs to tell us we've had enough. Really? I mean, Steven Spielberg talking about what's the movie called? Can't think of it. Ready Player One. Spielberg talking about people doing what people have been doing with this kind of stuff. What happens when it goes to its natural end is, you know, people literally sitting in diapers around the world gaming so they don't have to get up and lose points, or people who play a game online and their child, they're playing a nurturing game online, meanwhile their child is starving to death in real life. And, you know, this plays into so many other agendas. The transhumanist, posthumanist agenda, making Manchurian. We'll be right back.
happens when power goes out. Power goes out. Very strange. Anyway, so these kinds of stories obviously lend themselves to all kinds of bad things. You know, not the least of which, as I was saying, was schizoaffective disorder. Folks not being able to distinguish between reality and fantasy. And that's what we see in that sort of gaming culture. You know, we've seen a number of stories
between power outages and other fun things. I don't know what's going on exactly, but I apologize for the interruption and the inconvenience. So, CNN headline, Apple says all Macs and iOS devices are affected by chip flaws. And this was a suddenly a vulnerability that is identified far and wide. So many crazy stories. You know, Hillary's house burning, but it's not the house. It's the Secret Service guard shack behind the house. How convenient. You know, every time. And so, you know, you see the story, feds actively investigating Clinton Foundation. Suddenly there's a fire, you know. How convenient. So many crazy stories. The speaking of crazy stories, January 6th, arson suspected at home of Roy Moore accuser. That was an interesting story too. But I wonder what happened to the story that I'm actually looking for. And, you know, here's perhaps the coup de grace of the week. The story today, CNN headline, Trump to attend Tony Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. What's happening in Davos, by the way, right now? I was thinking about this yesterday. The president welcomes opportunities to advance his America First agenda with world leaders, Sanders said, at this year's World Economic Forum. What do you think? Does that sound like a conflict of interest? Maybe. Go hang out with Klaus Schwab and friends. Continuing with the story, we're just normalizing this. This is normal now. American administrators regularly send representatives to Davos, but presidents often decline to attend. Ronald Reagan spoke to the forum via satellite, as President Bill Clinton was the first to attend the summit in person when he traveled to Switzerland in 2000. Presidents George H.W. Bush, W., and Barack Obama never attended the meeting. Vice President Dick Cheney and Joe Biden both attended the forum during their tenures. Clinton delivered an impassioned speech in favor of open trade during his appearance. See, it's almost like you can't even use the English language anymore. Open trade is completely disingenuous. Continuing in the article, turning away from trade would keep part of our global community forever on the bottom, he said. That is not the right response. This year's event will put Trump in the same room as many of the international elites he attacked during his 2016 campaign, which seems to echo my point yesterday and before that, you know, folks are noticing, obviously, that candidate Trump and President Trump are almost like two entirely different folks. And the more that he folds into the establishment agenda as this trip to speak at the World Economic Forum clearly indicates that he is, the more that he is shown in a favorable light. And he is he seems to be, if there's a personality disorder that folks could attack, and there are obviously a number of folks like Harvard psychologists who want to, Yale psychologists who want to attack his mental fitness, who've never met him. But if there is a personality disorder, it is along the lines, again, of what Alan Watt has referred to, that hysterical attention-seeking psychopath that will do anything basically to stay in the limelight and to stay in favorable limelight. You know, a guy who says, I'm not crazy, I'm a smart, you know, healthy-minded genius. You got to wonder about somebody who says these kinds of things and tweets about things like this. It's not normal. It's bizarre. So, this year's event will put Trump in the same room as many of the international elites he attacked during his 2016 campaign. Trump's trip to Davos, a conference that runs from January 23rd to the 26th, will come just days before Trump delivers his first State of the Union address on January 30th. So he's going to get his marching orders, basically, at Davos for the year. I know that's cynical, but you know, that's kind of the way it looks. And speaking of international elites that he has attacked and Iran's counterpart across the Gulf there, that was interesting. Where is that story? Yeah, the Evening Sun. You know, that Evening Sun that you don't read or ever hear about ran the article from USA Today. One of the wealthiest men on earth is being detained and no one is talking about it. That, of course, talking about Saudi billionaire Al-Waleed bin Talal. The fact that he's, you know, still missing, essentially, still detained at the Ritz-Carlton, a five-star resort, because that's how they do it in Saudi Arabia, apparently. There have been shakedowns. There was a rumor that he was being extorted for billions. And he's the, you know, reportedly the 45th richest man on earth, according to, you know, the specious number keeping by Forbes and other outlets. But because that obviously doesn't take into account the folks that own the monopoly, right? Anyway, he's a mover and a shaker. So according to the USA Today story, billionaire who is known throughout the financial world has been held in detention for 2 months by Saudi Arabian authorities. As of yesterday, it was 2 months. But like the billionaire, the story has disappeared. Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal was rounded up along with 200 prominent Saudi royals, businessmen in a so-called anti-corruption probe. Now, what's interesting, I think, about this and fairly provocative. I mean, he's a regular guest on a lot of the financial programs, CNBC, CNN, Bloomberg, Fox, MSNBC. He's what you might call a regular contributor. He's friends with guys like Bill Gates and Rupert Murdoch. He's a major investor in Citigroup and Twitter, obviously. I think he's, what is he, the first or second largest shareholder in Twitter? Second, I want to say. Major share in News Corp. And it's real interesting. Two things that are kind of provocative. One, obviously there was the controversy when Bin Talal tweeted, one tweet in particular, with disparaging remarks toward Donald Trump. And two, the IPO of Aramco that's coming up is provocative. So I'll leave you to read that story. But it's interesting. You know, how do you – I mean, think about what that means. You're a guy that's worth, you know, $10 to $20 billion among what, you know, the specious ranking records as in the top 50 wealthiest people on earth. And yet you can be snatched and grabbed. Kind of interesting. So that's a provocative story, and there are bigger deals. I mean, there's the IPO of Aramco that's coming up, and then there's the new Silk Road in China that can't be overlooked, which is why the region is basically preparing. It's kind of like you know, how a country prepares for a major event like the Olympics or something, only, you know, times 1,000 basically. The IPO for Aramco is expected to, what are the numbers officially? the IPO is potentially about a $2 trillion deal. So from the USA Today story, look, Saudi Aramco, well, Jake Novak, senior editorial columnist at CNBC, was one of the folks that was spoken to for this article. He said, Novak said, look, Saudi Aramco, which is the Saudi Arabian state oil company, that's funny. Again, go back and listen to some of the stuff that James Corbett has done, which is fantastic. There are others, but go watch Big Oil, How Big Oil Conquered the World, Why Big Oil Conquered the World. Anyway, Saudi Arabian state oil company Aramco, which is going to go IPO probably later this year, is worth $2 trillion, maybe more to certain investors. Nobody wants to mess with the Saudi government right now when there are chances to get a little bit more on this IPO. So there's a lot of piracy moving and shaking going on is kind of the bottom line, which gets back to my point. I think timing is an issue on Iran, which is why Patrick Claassen just said what he said, and it's an economic issue, which is kind of what I was pointing to. There's the deal that's in the making, again, the new Silk Road in kind of the region, basically, you know, that area that in the new Silk Road route, obviously, Saudi Arabia's $500 billion city, Neom, is right there. You know, it would become kind of a port city in the new Silk Road. And, you know, if you look at the map of that, and that's obviously trillions of dollars as well, over $1 trillion in infrastructure build out and things along the way. And again, I think that kind of ties into why we're seeing stories like China moving people around, shuffling millions of people around under the guise of poverty, fighting poverty. Since when do they care about that? These people in the bush, well, they're kind of in the way for the new Silk Road, so we got to, you know, get those people out of the way. Oh, okay, now it makes sense. So that's interesting. There's a lot of piracy going on. Pirates are very excited because, you know, pirates do what pirates do. Anyway, I mentioned the Guardians series, and I thought it was interesting, the story, People Without Homes or Employment Need Practical Love, from our government proposed welfare changes won't help people pay their mortgage, rent, or find or secure housing, they should be immediately discarded. Oh gosh, you know, why be practical when you can use the problems that you create as a guise for ostensible solutions to line your pockets, of course. But I digress. Other interesting stories, and there are so many these days. Just crazy. There are a couple of stories floating around. VentureBeat is one of them. The headline, ex-Google engineer James Damore sues for discrimination. And he's not alone. You know, that's an old story, obviously. What do you call it? What's the group? They do... Oh, gosh. The lawsuit. I can't think of it. Anyway, they did a great video featuring James Damore and the issue. And it's interesting, you know, and this is part of a broader issue. I mean, people, when you think of Google, you have to wonder about an organization that's whose motto is "Don't be evil." Is that a problem for you? Is this a reminder? But you know, being part of Tectopus, for example, the wage suppression scam, the H-1B visa scam, and trying not to pay American workers, essentially. And then when a guy like James Damore says, you know, it seems like these policies are actually hurting women. Oh, you're a misogynist. What? We're losing our minds. Let's get our heads screwed on straight. Anyway, it's going to be a crazy year. There might be some impasses that we run into, that we encounter. I hope you're prepared mentally, morally, ethically. Again, virtue, morality, and religion is the order of the day. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care, God bless, and we'll catch you on the other side.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.